This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Stand by for first speed up. And wind wheels 2, 3, and 4 speeding up. Go. Curtis, you could be a little faster on this
bit. It's easy, I'm safe.
Yeah. That's better.
Right there.
Yeah, you're good. Okay, stand by for giving all out.
I love this company. And I don't want to see it go. The end of the season last year was one of the most incredibly awful moments of our lives. We managed to push back and successfully gain the support necessary to move the company forward into the 2015 season.
Per vendicarmi a fondo un falò.
And I think that the support that we got from the community in San Diego, from the opera community nationwide, actually even worldwide, helped us, you know, push forward into the 2015 season. And right now, it appears that the funding goals are well within reach. The ticket sales are good, and we have a very positive feeling about going into our 50th anniversary season. As a high school student in San Diego in 1965, I saw this theater open up with a brand new production of La Boheme built by the opera. And since that time, I've been lucky enough to be involved in building two new La Bohemes and then this production here that we have from English National Opera.
I work very closely with the director who originally directed this, and we'd worked together by then for about 12 years. So we were it was very much a collaboration, and he simply said to me at the beginning that he was interested in doing it in this period and was interested in the photography. And then I developed it and the design from that very simple conversation. Whenever I've designed anything, I've always worked through the whole piece to make sure that every single moment works. So to some extent, I think all designers direct the play or the opera as they are designing.
So where do we want to go?
This particular set is quite specific about where you can go and where you can't go because it's architectural. And because the rooms are not enormous, there's not a vast amount of choice. But the basic choreography used in the very simplest sense, I guess was more or less in my head as I designed it, but not with an eye for me directing it, simply an eye for the director having a good time when he worked on it.
Mimi is Allison Cambridge. Mm-hmm. Rodolfo Harold Mears. Mm-hmm. Sarah, you met already. Musetta, who brings up the Morgan Smith from Moby Dick is our Marcello. Malcolm McKenzie, Chonard, and Christian Van Horn, Colline, and our Scott Sykin is Benoit and Alcindor. So now, gentlemen, I'm just right to go up on the set.
Signorina.
characterize Rodolfo. Well, the obvious statement is that he's a poet. We don't know exactly how good of a poet he is, because clearly he makes his living writing articles and things like that. I think his aspiration is that's his day job, but he really is romantic at heart. So this poetry is very much a part of who he is, and he tends to live a little bit in a fantasy world. I think sometimes he talks about it, how even though I live in poverty, you know, I can live like a millionaire in my mind and in my soul because I have rhymes, I have words, and I can live in a different place. He feels things very deeply. One of the reasons he is really drawn to her is she uses his words, his poetic language that he's giving to her. She turns around and spins it right back and uses the same words right back to him to describe herself. That really catches him, you know, that she gets me. She understands that this poetry is part of me, and she's connecting with me on that level. So on the deepest level of his soul, that there's a connection there immediately.
I think she's heard the boys around the garret before, and she's had her eye on Rodolfo. It's a convenient occurrence that she needs to go up there and ask him to, you know, light her candle. And then what happens after that, I think there is a shyness to her because it's perhaps the first time that she's ever felt that sort of flutter that, oh, wow, is this love at first sight? And I think that's what makes her story and her love with Rodolfo so special. I think she's a woman with a lot of passion and a lot of soul and some gumption to go up there. And I think, for me anyway, that's how I like to play her. And I think it's more realistic and believable that then Rodolfo would just be so entranced by her. And it's that much more tragic when you see her decline. I think it's wrong to sort of play her death from the beginning, because you have to believe that Rodolfo sees a beautiful young woman enter into his apartment, not a sick, dying weakling. In the trio in Act Three, after she, you know, she's been eavesdropping on Marcello and Rodolfo, she hears Rodolfo say, Mimi is very sick. Mimi is dying. She hears him say that. She could have obviously been getting progressively sicker and sicker. But to hear your partner say it, she's dying, it's a shock to her to hear that. I think that's why it's important not to play her as so tragic and dying from day one.
We have the four guys, but the friendship in particular that's important is the one between Rodolfo and Marcello. I think they're the closest two. Perhaps Collini and Schaunard have the similar kind of best buddy relationship. We don't really know. We don't get to see that. But the Marcello-Rodolfo relationship is right out there for us to see. And while they rib each other, as guys often do, when the chips are down, they're the two that are left. It's a very strong bond that the two of them have.
Marcello is someone who is essentially ruled by his heart. He's also very much one of these characters that's the glue between the other characters in the piece. He's part friend, part psychiatrist, part lover, and really essential to this story. And I love those kinds of characters where you get to play an important role in every single act and every single scene. And he's a very dynamic character. And from an acting perspective, that's also a lot of fun to kind of sink my teeth into. What really attracts Marcello to Mazzetta, I think that's really up to the performer. That's up to the person playing the role. Because certainly the way she acts in public and it's kind of deplorable. You know, she's completely outwardly self-serving, needs to be the center of attention. I see him as being deeply concerned about the turn that Musetta has made. I think he knew Musetta more as Musetta is in the fourth act. You know, someone who is deeply compassionate, sympathetic, one of the strongest characters by the end of the opera.
Musetta is the life of the party. She is a woman who has learned how to charm men and get them to give her gifts and money and things like that so that she can survive in this world of bohemians and poverty. She's in love with Marcello. Of course, Marcello doesn't have much money. I really don't think that bothers her, but she also can't escape from the fun of chasing after all the other boys who can give her gifts. So she's sassy and fun and flirty, but she's also very real and very compassionate in Act 4 when she's praying as Mimi is about to die. She says, Mimi is an angel from heaven, but I'm not even worthy of forgiveness, but Mimi is. And I think that she's very pure and also honest inside of herself, even though she is frivolous and fun and sassy and all that other stuff. She's very caring and she's very real and true and multidimensional, absolutely.
Oh, I've definitely tried to incorporate in Act Two in the bar scene a lot of sassiness and physicality to try and get Marcello's jealousy heightened and get him to notice me. That's, you know, Musetta's entire goal there. And she does it in all kinds of ways by flirting and using her body. But they really do love each other. They just have a very difficult time of communicating with each other and making each other hear what is really the truth in their heart. My favorite moment is in Act Three.
My favorite moment of the opera in general is Act Three.
I have a couple of favorite moments in the opera. The first is Act Three.
My favorite moment to perform is my favorite moment because it's a favorite acting moment for me as an artist, and that's really the entire third act.
There's this juxtaposition of Mimi and Rodolfo being so tender and so loving to each other, and then Musetta and Marcello completely in that hot, heavy argument, that just crazy moment. And the irony that's there and the juxtaposition that's there, I think, is so fantastic.
The obvious challenges are that you've got to put together a big chorus, a lively chorus, and at the same time follow the narrative of the couple that you've just become interested in, which is effectively at this point Rodolfo and Mimi, and then they're introducing the new relationship between Marcello and Musetta, because Musetta tends to pull all the focus out of Act Two because it's such a she has such a fantastic aria. When we do the scene change, the chorus pours through the scenery. And so that's a very, very helpful start. And actually, the crowdedness is quite helpful. So although you could say that it's tricky to get all that chorus on stage at the same time as preparing all the intimate scenes, in fact, the crush of the chorus makes it more thrilling because it makes it feel very, very lively. I think that you're able to concentrate on the principals as you need to, so that you can focus in on the cafe, which is within the centre of all the activity, when you need to. It's just a question, really, of slightly shifting the lighting and slightly shifting the activity, so that you lessen the activity in one area in order to concentrate on the activity in the other area. And actually, I think this is... I think this is rather successful. So in this production, we can really get the energy and the liveliness of the chorus and follow the narrative, and follow all the details of the principals, including Musetta and her entrance and her aria, and all the other details of how the other principals respond.
Bohème is by an Italian composer, sung in Italian, and yet to me it seems very French, and I am not sure I can tell you why, except the delicacy and the elegance of some of the motives, some of the writing, is never over the top. In the very intimate sections, the writing is extremely moderate. It's not bombastic. There's not an extra note in this score. Anything that's as economical and compact and forceful without hitting you over the head as this, I'm not aware of. An act that's what? 30 minutes, the first act, a second act of between 18 and 20, and then 25, 26, and you have this work, which has become one of the favorite and most compelling pieces of opera. It's amazing.
Not included in the 228 people that I just introduced to you are 32 staff members of San Diego Opera, additional stagehands who loaded in and set up the scenery, the crew at the scenic shop, and 16 stitchers and crew in the costume shop who made all the alterations on the costumes. It adds up to 270 people.
You know, I was so looking forward to my debut, and then I, of course, heard that that debut may not happen. And then to see and hear how the community, not just the San Diego community, but the larger operatic and classical world community came together to make sure that this company's legacy could continue and that a 50th season could be possible it made me that more excited.
We're really focusing on getting out into the community and in trying to break the stereotype that opera is an exclusive event and to make it an inclusive event and to really include everybody from the great fabulous donors that we have to the students that come to the very first night at the opera and to introduce them to this amazing art form.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.